You're listening to Faith Conversations. Today we're speaking with Philip Yancey, New York Times bestselling author, and his most recent book is called What Good Is God? In Search of a Faith That Matters. One of the more interesting venues that you describe speaking into is a gathering of professional sex workers in Green Lake, Wisconsin. Tell us what that was all about.
Yes, I should clarify that they came from a lot of different places. This is no lot on Green Lake, Wisconsin. There is a beautiful Baptist retreat center there. And they've become concerned with human trafficking. Several million people each year are trafficked from often poor countries, Eastern Europe, and made into virtual sex slaves. So the professional sex workers, that's the euphemism, the phrase that prostitutes prefer. They asked me to use that phrase. I remember getting that call. I was sitting at home writing an article, and the call came and said, oh, we wonder if you could come speak to us next month. And I said, boy, I arranged my schedule pretty far in advance. And they said, well, we figured you'd be busy, but you're also a journalist, and we should tell you that there are going to be 100 prostitutes there. And that kind of got my attention. I'd never really met a prostitute. And he said they're actually brought from 40 different countries by ministries working, trying to free them from this life that they've been living. And we'd like you to speak to them about grace. It's something they have a hard time accepting and understanding. And you wrote a book about it. I wrote a book called What's So Amazing About Grace. I said, boy, I could do that. It does really sound interesting. However, I'm more interested in hearing their stories. Could you arrange a time where I do nothing but listen to them? He said, sure. So he set up a three-hour interview, one of the most engaging and poignant afternoons I've ever spent, where I heard these incredible stories of degradation, humiliation. The stories I heard were nothing like you see on TV, you know, these glamorous Las Vegas prostitutes. They are stories of people who are at the very bottom, who have a terrible self-image, who've been, in many cases, disowned from their families, and now are finding a different kind of life and trying to rebuild lives with the help of the grace of God and some wonderful people who have reached out to them.
What insight did you get about human nature in talking with that particular group, Philip?
My assignment was to talk to them about grace. And I remember so clearly one young woman from Bulgaria who described her story. I think she had been sold into sexual slavery when she was 7 years old. And she said, you know, we're at the very bottom. Everybody has somebody else to look down on. But we don't. We're at the very bottom. Nobody in this room had their parents say to them, now, honey, when you grow up, I want you to be the best prostitute in this town. They're ashamed of us. We know how society feels about us. We know the words they use to describe us. And she said, but when you're at the very bottom and you hear about something like grace, then you're open. And in her broken English, she said, at the low, sometimes you cry for help. And what I learned about human nature is no matter what you've done, no matter how bad you feel about yourself, God's grace can go that low, that deep, and begin that process of restoration that we all yearn for.
You're listening to Faith Conversations. Today we're speaking with Philip Yancey, whose most recent book, just out, is called What Good Is God? In Search of a Faith That Matters. Tell us about the title, Philip, and is that a question that you have a short answer to, or does it always entail a long answer?
I do have kind of a short answer. It's a question being raised openly. There are a whole group of people in the media called the New Atheists who are getting a lot of press, and they frankly raise that. And I would respond by saying, in this book, in the process of writing it, I could identify at least three levels in which God's goodness shows through. First is on an individual level. When I talk about these prostitutes or the alcoholics, I heard story after story of people saying, God transformed my life. He gave me the strength to get through one day, and then the next, and then the next, and I am becoming a new person. There's also the community level, so that when you go to a place like Virginia Tech or Mumbai or New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina, the church can act as a supportive community that brings practical help and comfort. And then there's the society level. If you Google the most prosperous, the most free, the countries that treat women the best, virtually all of them are countries with a Christian heritage. And gradually, Jesus said that the gospel works like yeast in bread. Just a little bit can spread through the whole loaf of bread. And I've seen that happen again and again in countries, in Europe, Scandinavia, the United States. If you travel beyond those countries, you see the contrast. So on all three of those levels, I would answer God's goodness is very evident.
That did jump off the page at me when you talked about the history and the culture of countries that are predominantly Christian. How does that jibe with some of the studies that show that Christian behavior isn't necessarily that much better than non-Christians? Is that a contradiction, or are we looking at two different perspectives?
I think we probably are looking at two different perspectives. I'm speaking of the kinds of things that our forefathers here in the United States recognized. Now, not all of them were Christians. They were deists. But they built the country based on Christian preconceptions, the dignity of individual people, equality. If you read the Bill of Rights, if you read the Declaration of Independence, there's a lot of Christian underpinning to that. And the treatment of people, freedom for commerce, there are a lot of things built into Western civilization, which came out of Christian roots. To me, the biggest example of that was when I went to Sweden. It's a wonderful country. A lot of Swedes up in Wisconsin, I know, and some have visited, and you notice, boy, what a great country. You don't see slums. People are honest. They're friendly. They're charitable. They're generous. But you go back a little bit in history, and you realize for a couple hundred years, prayers in Europe ended with the line, Lord, save us from the Vikings. Amen. So what turned this nation of warriors, of pillaging warriors, into this nice place to visit? Well, the gospel did. Gradually, it affected all of society. And that applies not just to firm believers who go to church every Sunday, but gradually the Christian sensibilities affects all of culture.
One time you were talking to an AA group, an Alcoholics Anonymous group, and the title of your talk was, Why I Wish I Was an Alcoholic. You'll have to explain that one to us, Philip.
I wasn't just trying to be witty or clever. As I was preparing, reflecting on what I knew of alcoholics who had been good friends of mine, good friends, I realized that every day they are forced to admit some things that are very hard for us. A lot of us, especially in America, we like to kind of do things on our own. We're self-sufficient. We don't need your help. Thank you. And part of what I believe as a Christian is that I can't make it on my own. I need God's help. I need the help of my fellow believers just to get through. I don't go to church because I've got my life together. I go to church because I need the church to help get my life together. And I realize that alcoholics, through their dependency, through no choice of their own, are forced every day to accept some of the hardest things for Christians to accept. It's easy for Christians to be kind of proud and self-righteous, and we need to learn some lessons from alcoholics. So I started with things that they had to teach me.
I think you said somewhere, didn't you, that you see in groups like that a more profound understanding of contrition than you do in an average church member.
That's absolutely true. It's easy when you go to church to want to look good, put on a good front. Well, there's no advantage in doing that in AA. Immediately we'll cut right through. You start out by saying, what's wrong with you? Hi, I'm so-and-so. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a drug addict. I'm a sex addict. You start with what's wrong with you. And, of course, in our Christian faith, we also start with what's wrong with us. But then after a while, we start thinking, well, maybe we've got that solved. Maybe we've cleaned that up. Maybe we're a little better than other people. And as soon as we allow those thoughts to enter in, we're in danger of falling. We need that daily reminder that the alcoholics taught me.
Our time is almost up, Philip. Just one last question, and it's about reading and learning. What can a person do with a book like this, or really any of your books, besides just sitting down as an individual and reading it? What do you hear from people about the way people can discuss in groups and share with each other so that the fruits are multiplied?
Several of my books have video curriculums where you can meet in a small group. I'm in book groups myself, and I love the idea of meeting with other people who read the same chapters and come up with very different perspectives. And especially in a community of faith where we challenge each other. This book is full of stories of people who have acted on their faith, sometimes in dramatic ways. And I hope that readers will not just say, oh, that's interesting, they do that in India, But rather they would say, oh, if someone could do that in India, what can I do in my hometown? What can I do in my children's school? How can I make that kind of difference of shining a light in a dark place, of contributing, of giving, of acting out the kingdom of God on earth?
Philip Yancey is a journalist and author, and his world travels have resulted in his most recent book called What Good Is God? 10 fascinating stories from 10 different parts of the world, critical situations, and then speeches that Philip gave in each one of those places. I recommend the book. You'll find it in any bookstore or online. Philip, thank you for taking the time to write the book. As always, for the thorough research and the careful wording, it's a gift to us.
I enjoyed it. I appreciate the fact that you actually read it carefully now.
Thank you for writing the book, and thank you for talking to us today.